Good evening, and welcome to the February 19th regularly scheduled meeting of the Board of Trustees for San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The board met in closed session, and we discussed, we had a conference with labor negotiators, we discussed anticipated litigation, and we reviewed personnel matters. At this time, I believe we have one brief revision to the order of business. This evening, we are going to pull item 8.02. It will be back on the March 5th agenda, and the reason for pulling that, our memorandum of understanding for school resource officer, is that the memorandum is not yet in final form, but it should be by our next meeting. So do we have, then, with that, taking in mind that revision, do we have a consensus on the order of business? Yes. Okay. Thank you. All right. Next up is approval of the minutes of February 5, 2019. Any comments, questions, revisions? If not, then a motion for approval would be welcome.
Do you need to announce closed session?
I did. Anything?
I'll move approval of the minutes of February 5th, 2019.
A second?
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. We have one representative to the board tonight, and we are glad you are here, Annalise. Well, fill us in.
Hi, I'm Annalise from Morro Bay, and I just have some updates for you guys about what we're up to at Morro Bay High School right now. So first of all, next week our school is going to be taking part of a nationwide program called Say Something, and so it's going to be called Say Something Week, and essentially the goal of the week is to raise awareness, educate, and reinforce the power that young people have to prevent tragedies when they speak up and say something to a trusted adult. So we're really going to be focusing on that next week and making sure that everyone at Morro Bay feels safe and welcomed in our community and feels like they have someone to talk to when they feel like they need to report something. In addition to that, ASB is getting ready to put on our annual March Madness basketball tournament. It's in the beginning of March, and we have different groups of students form teams, and they play games against each other at lunch in a basketball tournament, and groups of kids can come and watch, and it's a really popular thing at our school, so we're looking forward to that. In terms of sports, winter sports, I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't talking very close to the microphone. In terms of sports, winter sports are pretty much wrapping up, but our wrestling program is still going on. We have a senior wrestler named Cole Visconti who is going to state. And that pretty much wraps up what is happening at Morro Bay High School right now, so thank you.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. That'll be exciting to, and fill us in next time, please.
Okay.
All right. So with that, you are, as always, welcome to stay. We, however, we understand that you have other obligations and work, so if you need to move on, do so with our thanks for attending tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Moving on, 5.02, Baywood Elementary School Program Highlights. Mr. Mayfield.
Yes, good evening. I'm going to introduce Lisa Stevens, principal at Baywood Elementary, and she's going to introduce staff and students and tell you a little bit about their work around civic engagement.
Great, thank you.
Hi, my name is Lisa Stevens. I'm the principal of Baywood, and I'm super excited tonight to share with you one of our focus areas this year, which is looking at civic engagement. So one of the things that we did during our November planning day is we were looking at our history social science framework and seeing how we can add in the civic engagement piece into one of our units. So we looked at going across curricular areas and using our garden, our makerspace, and so I'm really excited tonight to share with you our second second grade unit. So our wonderful second grade teachers are going to be talking a little bit more specifically about what they did in second grade to really increase civic engagement. And then we have one of our wonderful scholars here in second grade, and she's going to be sharing a video that she put together for you showing the whole unit in their learning. And if you're lucky, you get to taste some of our strawberries that we grew in our Baywood garden as you're enjoying the video. So hope you enjoy. So I'll pass it over to our second grade teachers to talk a little bit more about the unit itself.
Good evening. I'm Kirsten May. I teach second grade at Baywood. Hi, Kirsten. So we're really excited to share our second grade economics unit with you, and this is really highlighting our GLAAD training and this collectively designed civic engagement unit about the farm-to-fork journey of our food. So the new California History Social Science Framework suggests that we apply what we know about natural systems and food production with a focus on strawberries, a major California crop, to learn about the interdependence of producers and consumers in the economic system. So we were able to engage students' interest by developing an understanding of this complex interdependence among the many workers in the food industry and how it functions the way that it does. We used GLAAD design graphic organizers to help illustrate these relationships and how the climate and geography affect the crops farmers grow. Students were able to observe the many linkages between their homes, the markets that supply their food, the places where people work to produce their food, and the transportation systems that move food from farm to processor to market.
Hi, I'm Cherie Newell. I teach second grade at Baywood also. So one of the goals we also had was tying in our family community, and so we partnered with parents to work at planting the school community garden that we have at our school, and worked with visual arts. Also, we worked with SLO County Community Wellness for nutrition lessons, and we plan to give our students a true farm-to-fork experience through a field trip. It's been rained out twice, third time's a charm. We're going to make it happen next week. But also, students, they applied all of this knowledge in an informational writing piece highlighting the learning of the California strawberry story, and grew their knowledge of the interdependence by becoming experts of food production in the following other countries: corn from Mexico, coffee from Brazil, wheat from Syria, and rice from Vietnam.
So we'd like to invite you to enjoy a video about our second graders and their learning. But first, I'd like to introduce you to second grade scholar Paige Seamus. She was instrumental in the development of the video, and she also edited the video along with her father, Jason, who did all the filming back there. Hi, Jason. Didn't want to be named, but this is his work. So Paige will be serving you some strawberries from our Baywood school garden that just got a lot of rain. So, and she'll be available for your questions after the video.
So we have one for May and one for New.
Cool. Okay.
We're good.
In kindergarten and in first grade. Job. We're not digging right here. So go.
Deep.
There you go, Wyatt. Go ahead and put yours in there.
I'm already.
Strawberries, you can put them in the compost bin for the worms.
Strawberries.
Eat mine.
Who, what? What are you, what's happening? You were wondering.
The smiles on the kids' faces during hands-on learning makes everything worth it.
Charts that are around the room reflect the social science that we've been studying, and what we've done is use these charts as a way for the children to access the information and then transfer it to their writer's workshop time, which is focusing on informational writing as well.
Loosen it a little bit. There you go. And put it in your hole.
I think I'm ready for mine.
It's not very exciting. First, stick a 3 to 4 inch hole. Your hands will get dirty. Next, you go to the store and you get a sewing clip. Then place it in your hole. You might want to put it in tapeworms.
And these are all the strawberry plants, and they're growing all these strawberries, and then there's a worker harvesting right there.
This page will teach you facts about the California strawberry. 1. California grows 80% of American strawberries. 2. California is like a greenhouse for strawberries. 3. California is famous for strawberries. Did you know that?
You need to poke a hole with your finger. Now put the seeds in the soil.
Next, you need to bury.
Alright, great. So, when you eat a strawberry, you really eat like 2,000 fruits. In World War
II. So, this activity that they're involved in right now really ties together all of the lessons that we've been working on, and it really demonstrates the engagement of all the students due to the connection between our writing, our social studies, and hands-on learning as well.
And learning our different parts of speech and a cognitive content dictionary, highlighting some key vocabulary really helps to make those connections between like the farm to the fork, and helping students to understand where their food comes from and the economy surrounding it. And they take all this knowledge of the California strawberry that we spend so much time teaching, and then they will become experts on crop production in other countries and learning about this global impact of transporting goods and services around the world. So we will be studying coffee from Brazil, corn from Mexico, wheat production in Syria, and rice production in Vietnam, and how that's just like the California strawberry crop production.
With the Food Service Department for San Luis Coastal Unified. And the point is we want to talk to kids about where their food comes from, what's in season, and get them trying new things, because this particular produce item is going to be on the garden bar all month long, being showcased. And so we hope that kids will try it when it's fun right now, and then they'll keep trying it every day afterwards at on the garden bar.
Kind of make sure there's a good amount of paint. Thank you.
Paige, thank you for that. It was very informative. What my question is, what else will you be growing in your garden this year?
I don't actually know.
Okay, that's all right. We'll all learn together then. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you, and thank you to your dad. This is great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for coming. All right, next up is item 5.03, introduction of Morro Bay Police Chief and School Resource Officers. Dr. Prayer.
Well, thank you for allowing Baywood to come and present their highlight.
So great.
And, you know, when I see these wonderful things happening at our schools, I know what it takes and all the effort it takes that goes into keeping our schools thriving and safe. So tonight, I just want to put a face to some of the people that keep our schools safe, that keep an eye on our schools and make sure that good things happen within those schools, and bad things are kept out of those schools. And so we have a great partnership that we have long held with the San Luis Obispo County and the Sheriff's Department in particular. Ian Parkinson has been a staunch advocate for the SRO program, and I remember and recall him reaching out to me 9 years ago, and he just said, you know, Dr. Prater, I just want to let you know that we have Deputy Correa out in San Luis, in Los Osos, who is going to be there and dedicated to that, to the Los Osos community and schools. And and so that's been I've had the pleasure of knowing her since 2010 when I arrived. And and tonight I actually met for the first time Deputy Newell, who is the SRO as well in the Los Osos community and in our unincorporated areas. So I'd like to introduce Deputies Correa and Newell and just give them a chance to introduce themselves and say hello.
Good evening. Some of you I already know. You know, I'm Deputy Correa, and some of you, some new faces. So Dr. Prater introduced both Deputy Newell and I. I actually retired 3 years ago, but I didn't want to stop completely what I was doing. So when I had been planning for a couple years to retire, kind of, you know, looking forward, I met with Ian Parkinson, the sheriff, and I said, this is my plan. Can I come back part-time? And he said, without any hesitation, thankfully, he said, absolutely. And so Deputy Newell is actually my full-time replacement. And but I still teach the GREAT program, so I'm teaching the GREAT program here in Cayucas and Cambria. And then just last week, I started up at Branch, or down at Branch Elementary, filling a hole that we have right now, and Dorothea Lang in Napomo. So Deputy Newell and I are here a lot. We're, you know, we kind of switch off, but Deputy Newell, he's more the enforcement deputy for the schools on San Luis Coastal and out at Los Ranchos, wherever is needed, over at Monarch, at Baywood. So, and I've been a school resource officer, started in 18 years ago. So I've been in around the whole county except Shandon. It's the only school I've never taught at. But I did teach with Ms. McGrath at Creston. And we were trying to figure that out. It was about 11 years ago. Yeah. So I've known her, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Thank you for allowing us to come here and meet you folks. My name's Scott Newell again. My wife was up here earlier, Sheree Newell, so we're kind of related. I've been working for the Sheriff's Department for almost 20 years now. I've been a school resource officer for three of them, and I'm really enjoying being on the, I call it the positive side of law enforcement. I like to make positive contacts with the kids. I feel that's my priority, is making positive contacts with the kids so they could put a face to a law enforcement officer that they're not afraid of or they think they got to run away from or any of that stuff. And some of the things I do here at Los Osos Middle School is I help with the STEAM program. I'm in there quite a bit with Mr. Wilcox, and he allows me to work with the kids in there, and I have extensive history in cabinet making, so I share my skills with the kids in that. Mm-hmm. And up at the high school, up at the high school in Cambria, we started a program called the Sheriff's Teen Challenge. That I've had one class so far. I took 18 kids, students, out to the police academy at Lompoc, and we spent a day out on the EVOC course, which is the Emergency Vehicles Operations course. So we teach them how to handle a car when it's not going down the road perfectly, when it gets a little sideways, what to do if the car goes off the road a little bit, how to get back on the road safely. And they really enjoyed the skid pad. I think everybody enjoyed that the most. So that was a wonderful program that I hope to continue in the county and spread to all the schools in the county. So hopefully one day we'll be able to do that. But other than that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for what you do for our kids.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Oh, and I just want to do a shout-out to the Morro Bay High School boys golf team. They played today their first match against San Luis High School.
And as we move further north, we have the city of Morro Bay. And so linking our partnership with the city of Morro Bay has been really exciting with the new police chief, Jody Cox. And we've worked really hard. Tonight, we did pull the MOU for the new SRO program that we're putting together. We will have it back in front of you March 5th at our next board meeting. There's just some technicalities. But I'd like to introduce Chief Cox as well as the SRO Maria Lamelli. And they are amazing and know the kids at Del Mar and Morro Bay quite well. So please come on up.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having us, both Dr. Prater, thank you, the district and the board. We appreciate you having us. It's going to be hard to follow Paige because if my partner can't sing or dance, topping Paige and her Baywood group is going to be hard. So we just want to say thank you again for having us here. You know, as Dr. Prater stated, when I took over as chief, I've been in this job over 31 years, and I've been involved in some of the school programs over the course of those in different positions that I've held. When I took over as chief, one of my priorities was to reestablish the relationship that we had with the school district, and especially in Morro Bay. We reached out to Dr. Prater, and we've had just a great opportunity to kind of to get that relationship back and put it where it needs to be as far as having a presence at Morro Bay High School and at Del Mar High School. Maria Lamelli was our SRO there. She'd been trained for it, and Maria and I had both come from the Central Valley. She was one of my detectives over there in one of the previous divisions. So we have a long history of working together, and I couldn't recommend somebody better for that program in Morro Bay High School than Maria. She's a phenomenal police officer. She's a phenomenal investigator, awesome with children. So I think it's going to be a great partnership to have us back there. So thank you for having us, and I'll let Maria speak.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm very excited to see the program come back. I am looking forward to continuing my work with the children at Morro Bay High School and the elementary school. It wasn't something that I'd done in the past, and it was a great experience for me to be at the high school and at the elementary school and just to see and work with the children every day and serve as a mentor and counselor to them. So I'm looking forward to the program again. And, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Chief.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming out.
Thank you. So, Dr. Prater, I have a question. I'm curious about where we stand with working with San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, so hopefully by the March 5th board meeting, maybe the March 19th board meeting, we'll have an SRO MOU arrangement with the city of San Luis Obispo. But at minimum, I will invite the chief from San Luis out, Deanna Cantrell, as well as Captain Smith, who is working with us. So you can expect to see, hopefully within the next 6 weeks, we should have our SRO agreements and our program model back in place. And as all of you know, that's only one component of developing and securing safe schools, and but it's a key component and something I look forward to having back.
Okay, great. Thank you for that update. Any other questions regarding this from the board? All right, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you again. All right, item 6.01 is correspondence. We did receive a letter from Dr. Brescia regarding the fiscal year 2018-2019 first interim report on the budget, and other than that, there was no other official correspondence at the time of the posting of the agenda. All right. At this time, we will open our meeting up to public comment. These are for items not listed on the agenda unless someone has something pertaining to an agenda item but they wish to speak to it now, they are welcome to do so. Each speaker is limited to 3 minutes for speaking. And at this time, I'll see if we don't have any yellow sheets. Is there anyone at this time wishing to address the board? All right, seeing no one, we will move on to our superintendent's updates. And I believe that Dr. Prater is giving Mr. Pinkerton's update.
Yeah, Mr. Pinkerton is coaching a playoff game with his daughter's basketball team this evening. So I'll take over his spot. And, of course, he scripted out for what I should say. I will move off script. Basically, there's two items that we'd like you to know about. One is the County of San Luis Obispo associate or assistant city county administrator Guy Savage will meet with us this week to talk about the specifics on the mitigation agreement for SB 1090, and we believe the funding for that will be secured. The first round of funding for that will be secured by December 2019. So we're excited to know that. I'll have more information and details in Friday notes for you. And Mr. Pinkerton wanted to let the board know that Pacific Beach High School staff will be selecting and picking out new furniture for their school in the coming weeks. And if you've been out there, you'll know that they'll benefit from that. Great. So it's a good thing.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have our educational services update. Mrs. McGrath.
Great. Happy to share a couple of things. We had a foundation board meeting today as well. Went really well. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers serving on that on your behalf, and lots of great energy and things moving forward. They have created a task force for learning grants, so I do believe that will begin to move forward and be a really positive aspect of it for our district. Wanted to let you know about an upcoming grant, state grant, that's called the Low Performing Student Block Grant. So this is about $288,000 that Mr. Mayfield applied for us. This would allow us to spend those funds in 2020 and 2021. And the purpose is so that it kind of meets, I think of it as unduplicated students. It's the students that are not necessarily served by the unduplicated student funds that we receive, but that are still low scoring. So students that need extra support in math and English that have scored at levels 1 and 2, and we're putting together a plan to be able to serve those. We'd like to bring forward to you the formal plan next time for your review and adoption. But just a little quick preview, we're kind of looking at three different areas, and we're excited excited about this, kind of expanding intervention work, working with small groups for students that are needing that extra support, as well as some professional development and some ongoing coaching, because we all understand that one-time professional development is not typically as effective as ongoing coach and feedback. So we're excited about this opportunity and just wanted to give you some a preview of that. So looking forward to presenting that next time.
So the grant will be presented to us before it's submitted or after it's submitted? So
we had to submit just a general statement that says we're hoping to go for it, okay. and then we're going to present the plan to you at the next board meeting for your review and approval.
Okay, I see. All right. And who's the grant through?
This is a state grant.
You told me. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next is our Measure D update.
Yes, there are paving projects going on at C.L. Smith and Bellevue Santa Fe, and actually they're going out for bid, and we hope to accomplish those when school gets out this summer to save them from all the noise and disruption that creates. And we also had a successful Measure D study session last mm-hmm. week, where we discussed the rental rates for our surplus properties, as well as the overall budget, along with priorities. Lastly, we were able to see the progress of the J-Wing, or the steam engineering wing, at Morro Bay High, which was quite amazing. I still marvel at the knowledge that our kids are going to benefit from that in the years to come. It's a phenomenal facility with great teachers, mm-hmm. and the vision is phenomenal. So I'm excited for what's coming our way on the coast here.
Great, thank you. All right, we're moving into the discussion action portion of our meeting. So next is the CSBA delegate assembly ballot. Dr. Prater.
Yes, the assembly ballot needs to be acted on, should be acted on by the board. The CSBA delegate assembly for Region 9C represents all districts in San Luis Obispo County. Two delegates are selected with staggering terms. Our Mark Buckman term continues while Vicki Mayer from Lucia Mar has been nominated for re-election. So I leave it to you to consider her nomination on this ballot.
All right, thank you. Is there any discussion among the board with regard to this? Mr. Buckman? Well, I will. Hey, do you have a comment? Okay. All right. All right. Is there anyone from the public here to address this item? All right. Mr. Unger, your light was on. Oh. Mr. Buckman?
Yeah,
yes, it's on.
Yeah, you're on.
Okay. I've worked with Vicki both at the CSB Delegate Assembly and Tri-County Education Coalition. She's been a phenomenal asset and brings perspective. So not that there's another choice, but unless somebody has another comment, I'd like to nominate her from this board.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right, as you will recall, we've pulled item 8.02, so we will go on to 8.03, National Clearinghouse Student Tracker, College Enrollment and Graduation Rates. Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. Excited to share this information with you. I think this is some really interesting information about what our students do as they leave our schools, and part of the way that we can look at our level of success, I think, if students are leaving us and being successful. So when we think about students that we're working to create college and career students, this will focus on the college portion of that. So today I will share with you the National Clearinghouse. It's called the Student Tracker Information. So this is a nationwide source of data. Since this data is about students after they have left our organization, it's not data that we gather and we pull. We actually pay for this service, and that information is gathered about what they do after they leave us, and then the information is sent to us. So it looks at these questions. You can see the questions listed here. So how many of our graduates enroll in college? Do they persist? Are they able to graduate from college? How long does it take for them to get their degrees? Do they attend a 2 or 4 year school? And which ones are they attending? That's what we'll look at today. Wrong way, sorry. Here we go. So starting with college enrollments. If you look at this, this first graph is showing you the percentage of students that are enrolled within any college. And notice that it's the percentage of students enrolled at any time during their first 2 years after high school. So we started with a class of 2012, and then you can see how it follows there. So we started kind of in the mid to low 70s, and that has increased to the low 80s. Probably thinking about percentages, this isn't necessarily one that you think 100% is total success, right? So this one's kind of interesting to think about. If you think about if a student leaves our district finishing a, let's say, for example, a welding pathway and finishes with a welding certificate and leaves to obtain a job that they're passionate about in welding, I think all of us would probably agree it's a successful student that we're proud of the path that they've taken, which would not show up in this data, right? So just interesting to think about. Often we look for data to continue to improve and grow and grow and grow. Not necessarily in this data. I think we want to see students productive in college and career, or college or career, and depending on what they've chosen to do and finding a passion that's really productive, it's not necessarily data that we're looking to aim to 100%. That makes sense? What does stand out is that the large majority of our students go to some type of college the first 2 years after high school. Next, this is interesting. I think of this as the Quest to Promise impact right here. So what you'll see is enrollment in a 2 year versus a 4 year college. So this is the same information, percentage of students enrolled after their first 2 years after high school by the institution level, meaning 2 year or 4 year. So you can see where it started, where there was that little blurb there in 2012, but basically it started with the 4 years, four-year university, right, having a higher percentage rate. But then you'll notice right there, 14-15, that it flip-flops, and that's right about when Quest to Promise happened, right? So you had the first year of if a student goes from high school straight into Questa for free, now that being a two-year commitment to them for free, so a lot of students take advantage of that opportunity. It's a great opportunity for our students. So you can see really clearly how that changed our dynamic there. The next data that you will see is the enrollment within the first 2 years after high school, but instead it's broken up by student group. So what you'll see is on the bottom you have 2015 in the light blue, and then 2016 in the green, and 2017 in the darker blue. The number that you see on the far left, where it says all 502, is from just 1 year. So we were trying to avoid number confusion of having numbers everywhere. So it's usually in the 500-ish range is what you should assume by that. So you can see it holds pretty steady when you're looking at the all number. The next one is non-socioeconomically disadvantaged. So you can see that that was about 337 students and that they are attending at a higher percentage than our socioeconomically disadvantaged students. Next, you can see that English language learners, only 16 was the number when it was at 44%. So you can have big swings when you have small numbers like that. And the big swings can also happen when you have different levels, right? So if I'm graduating and still in my early learning of English, it could definitely impact what I do after leaving high school, right? Versus I could be an English language learner that's much further along in my English language development. And I think Ellen asked some good questions this weekend around that. Since students with disabilities, about 54 students, again, you have to be a little careful drawing huge conclusions, although this data stayed kind of, stayed consistent, although when it's 54, you have to be careful again, just in making broad conclusions. But you'll notice EL and students with disabilities at a lower percentage rate. This one is interesting. Most common institutions of enrollment in the fall, so this would be following their high school graduation. So you can see Cuesta College, obviously the by far ranking. I think that's close to 45-ish percent of students going right to Cuesta College, with Cal Poly in our neighborhood being 352. I would think that's 11-ish percent. And then you could notice the other ones. Some great UC schools and other schools that students join in, and notice the other two-year there, Santa Barbara City College. So next, looking at the graduation rates. So this one, it made my eyes cross a little at first. You have to kind of think about this. But I'll go slow and think about this here. So you have to start with just thinking about one class, because it's saying, let's look at what happened in 6 years' worth. So now that we are able to look at the 2018 data, you have to say, okay, then that means we're starting with the class of 2012. Okay, so starting with the class of 2012, you'll notice that there's that 73-ish percent that were new to college. And the purple group there says, basically, the data, the clearinghouse couldn't find them. National Clearinghouse said, we can't tell where they are. So then you say, what's happening to them in their first year? So then you'll notice the small red section there says they've graduated. So we will assume that's an AA that they have finished with. And there's a 3 to 4% more that join in their second year. And then the orange is persisting. Notice how the yellow one is no longer enrolled and not graduated. So I would say that yellow 9% there is something that we would want to keep our eye on. And the purple, not sure. Not able to find that group. Is that making sense? Mm-hmm. So then you follow for 14, 15. So again, you have the yellow increasing, so that you can see the pattern of they're no longer enrolled and no longer graduating, right? The longer it persists through the 6 years. And you can see the group that's starting to graduate in the dark red. And then notice the orange group still persisting. Everyone usually smiles. They can put a face to that with a student that's still going, right? 7 years or, yeah. Taking a little while, but still sticking with it. So I'm going to help draw some conclusions here in a second, because I think that one is a lot to look at. But let's look at graduation rates by the same student group. So when you look at all, so if we're taking that six-year graduation rate, so you're thinking about that group. So if you look at the all group, you have about 250 out of the 534, which is about 47% that did graduate within those 6 years. The not socioeconomically disadvantaged, you can see a gap there, right? A large gap between the success that you're finding being able to graduate not socioeconomically disadvantaged versus socioeconomically disadvantaged. 34 of the 154. Definitely a focus area for us, with EL at 8% and students with disabilities at 17%. So let's think about kind of conclusions. What do we make of all this information? It's a lot to take in at once. So conclusions I think about is, this is an overall focus on being college and career ready. We do have increased college enrollments from, let's say, mid-70s to the low 80s. Cuesta Promise definitely impacted enrollments. You can see really clear switch in the data around that time. Around 82% of all students do enroll in some type of college, so that's a large majority. The not socioeconomically disadvantaged students definitely enroll at a higher percentage rate than our socioeconomically disadvantaged students. I think you find that same pattern with the other data points that we look at, right? And that's why I think, I start to look at LCAP feedback we're getting from many different groups. It's definitely a focus that we need to keep continuing to work on. Cuesta College definitely being the most common, with Cal Poly being the most common four-year. And thinking about our next steps, so continuing that focus on college and career readiness, really that balanced focus so that students leave us successful, continue to focus on equity, and that is our way that we're going to work to get towards the socioeconomically disadvantaged students, and saying what can we do above and beyond for those students so that we continue to find ways to help them be successful. And then discussing the data with administrators and kind of determining action steps and plans in order to address this. Happy to answer any questions.
First, I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak to the board on this item? Right. Mr. Buckman, Mrs. Rogers, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I just have a couple of quick questions. I hope on slide 7, where we saw the schools and the preferences. I was surprised we had this like leap over Hancock College. And it goes down to Santa Barbara. And I'm just wondering if the counselors are there just not the courses or the programs. I mean, the fire academy is down there. The police academy is down there.
Anecdotally, is that I hear a lot of students just drawn to kind of getting away, kind of going away to school, but yet starting at a two-year. So they feel like they kind of are away from home, kind of starting their own thing, but yet they're at Santa Barbara and have, you know, they're where I guess Santa Maria and Hancock still feels like they're at home. That's just kind of anecdotally what I've heard students saying, is they feel like they're still kind of going away a little bit.
So within the community college, each one of them is allowed so many programs. So there's only so many nursing programs in the state. So I just am hoping we talk to the students about Hancock, if there's some good programs down there that they can't get at City, Santa Barbara City, or at Fresno.
Great point.
The second question, I know we had heard from the foundation that they're going to be looking for alumni trying to track alumni. So we've got here, somebody's tracking our alumni. Is there a way that they would share with us at least the names?
They will not. They actually will not share with us how they track this either. So, okay. Yeah, interesting.
And then I appreciate the fact that we're tracking the two-year students and their success there. But I'm wondering, hopefully some of our students will or are going on to the trades and apprenticeship programs, and I'm just trade schools, and I'm just wondering if that will be added at some point or we can ask for it.
Yeah, we could always ask and see. This is nationally drawn data, so I'm not positive how much of an influence we could have, but I hope that with a lot of data where it's kind of starting to balance more with college and career, that keyword being and, that maybe they would begin to look at that as well. It never hurts to ask.
No, thanks. This was great information. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. In response to Mr. Buckman's comment, I'm wondering if the attendance at Santa Barbara City College might not have something to do with, does UCSB give preference to JC transfers? Local JC transfers.
Interesting. I'm not sure.
That may be sort of a road to get into UC Santa Barbara. But for myself, I would love to have information on our AVID students and where they go after high school, what their college graduation rate is, and I realize we can't get it from this data company, but I'm wondering if that's something that we ourselves might have an interest in tracking. Would be wonderful to see how they do. And then on the statistics that you showed us, where do you think our RFEP students are represented?
Yeah, it's interesting. They, we're kind of at the mercy of whatever they give us, right? So it's not a group that they follow. So we're not able to pull anything additional that we're looking for, since they just give us the data. They're not giving us student names, student ID numbers or something so that we can disaggregate it. We kind of are at the mercy of whatever they choose to disaggregate. So you'll notice on students with disabilities it was only 2 years were there because they've only pulled that data for 2 years.
Okay, so it does show our ELs who are leaving still as English learners, graduating as English learners, but the RFEP are just have gone into the mix.
True.
Thank you.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Thank you. I can't see it. Yes, it's on. I remember 10 years ago when I was first becoming aware of this, the tracking of this, that our students who went to Cuesta College were considered not college on a college graduation track. So mm-hmm. that so we had this this mismatch of what was happening with those students. So it's very helpful to have that number now because we can consider these students on a career college and career path. So now my question is about our students going into trades, since we're going to be doing so much with the CTE. I wonder if we will be able to track students going into welding trades or computer programming trades, or do we have any notion of whether this student tracker might be able to do that for us?
Yeah, I think it's similar to Mark's question. Yeah, that it doesn't hurt for us to ask, and we could see if they had a willingness to do that. My guess is that it's really hard to track. So if a student, you know, finishes high school with a welding certificate and starts at a welding company, how do we know? You're either asking the student to see if you can get a response from them, or you're, you know, it's not really logistically practical to ask every business, right, who's, you know, so I think the logistics of it is really tricky. But I do think there's some way it would be interesting to see how they could acknowledge that.
Yeah, maybe an active alumni group at each of the high schools that tracks. I'm just thinking out loud right now, mm-hmm. not that you should do that, but that would be helpful to know, because I have a feeling we may have a lot of very successful students coming out of our automotive programs and our welding and such.
So mm-hmm. Great point.
This is great.
Mr. Unger.
I'm wondering if the proposed student data system that Governor Brown rejected but seems to be resurrected by Governor Newsom will have any effect on the numbers that we start to get. And I'm kind of hoping that it will, because I know that he has an interest in looking at, you know, essentially a kind of a consolidated system for K mm-hmm. into college. So I hope mm-hmm. that happens. I just wanted to comment that, and I don't know if anybody else read it today, I can't remember which periodical I read it in, but a study reporting the college success rates of SED students at more Ivy League colleges, and it was significantly less, the six-year graduation rate. Then they looked at, this was a look using Pell Grants, for example, and the biggest issue was poverty and the inability of students in poverty to be able to maintain college and to be able to pay for not only the college tuition, but also the room and board and books and things mm-hmm. like that. And that's clearly, I think, reflected in the data that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. When we start looking at those numbers, I don't know that there's anything we can do about it at this level other than to support things like free college for all. You know, we're seeing that hopefully at the community college level. I think we're going to be seeing that. Hopeful that we are. It would be nice to be able to go back to the days of when I was at Cal, you know, Humboldt State, and I was paying $67 a quarter to go to school. You know, community college was free. So I think this is really good data. I think we've got some equity issues. I don't know what we can do to address them here. I think looking and seeing where the avid students wind up, mm-hmm. I think would be really helpful. And if we could look at those six-year persistence rates, for example, I think that might mm-hmm. be quite interesting.
Happy to.
Right. Thank you. I will note that I was curious about how we might fit in nationwide, and I did find a website through the Chronicle of Higher Education that showed that for it was a six followed used a six-year plan, and California ranks ninth for public schools with students graduating within 6 years. We rate fourth in private universities with a six-year graduation rate and eighth for private for-profit. And if anyone's interested, I can send you a link. But it will list by institution as well as a comparison data to other states and other institutions. So I was kind of wanted to know where we fit, and then there's other information you can find where our geographic area fits within the state of California. So there are ways to dig kind of deep into determining where we fit in the overall scheme of things, should anyone have an interest. So. And Dr. Prater, your light is on.
Yeah, I would just like to lend a comment to what Chris, Mr. Unger, said about poverty having an impact on college completion. And I was on Saturday evening invited to a friend's house for dinner, and there was quite a few families there, and we were talking specifically about their children who are attending universities, state schools in our state. And what they were telling me was the preponderance of students living in their cars, mm-hmm. and trying to find safe places to sleep was their primary challenge, because they keep getting bumped, they keep getting moved, and yep, mm-hmm. and so now there's conversation about community colleges opening up parking lots for students to sleep in. San Francisco State, in particular, isn't a community college, but San Francisco State was one of the schools mentioned where a middle class family living in San Luis Obispo, their son was trying to live within the budget, and the amount going out to rent, he wanted to save and just live in his car. And that was the conversation at dinner time, so that he could study and live a reasonably sane life without being so stressed out. And so if that's happening in the circles that I was in on Saturday night, I can only imagine what's happening to our students who are genuinely within poverty, trying to get a college degree and move ahead.
Ellen, if I can, prophetic, Cuesta College just approved students living in their cars on campus. So it's here in our wonderful place where we live. It's right here as well.
And I would say anecdotally, my son, a graduate of San Francisco State, lived in a one-car garage with five other people, and it was barely affordable for us. So there you have it. Mrs. Rod.
Okay, and I would chime in that my son, who went to Humboldt State, as Chris and I both did, spent the last year living homeless. And it was an incredibly difficult year for him, trying to figure out moving his car around and sleeping in rest stops and showering on campus. And it took a real emotional toll on him, and he was not alone. There are many students that are living this way in order to be able to go to school. And part of it is the cost of housing is so high, and they are allowing so many more students in than they're able to house, that it's really a very difficult circumstance for young people. I'm keenly aware of it.
And it speaks to the persistence of those students who so badly want to continue their education, that they will pursue it despite situations like this. Mm-hmm. So great admiration to those students who do persist and hang in there and do what it takes to complete their education. So there's that as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. This was a discussion item only, no action. And next on our agenda is our equity update presented by Mr. Mayfield.
Good evening. I wanted to just anecdotally bring you up to date on some of our activities regarding equity this year. A lot of good things are happening, and I'm going to share just a few of those with you this evening. We started, of course, with our August Equity Day, all staff, on the 15th of August. Trudy Arriaga, who was the keynote speaker at that August Day, has worked with sites on opening doors, and it's a three-person site team, an administrator, a teacher, and a classified employee. And then Kristen Looney, who is now Kristen Farrington, has worked with that same three-person site team, as well as history and social studies secondary sixth grade here on the coast up to 12th grade on civil dialogue. And we do a little exit ticket at the end of each of these activities and send it out to all the participants and get back the opinions they have and some rating scales. We've sent that off to Cal Poly to be analyzed, and I'll share that with you at the end of the year, some of the results from those exit tickets. I think they're quite interesting. Equity Institute, we're doing on seven Fridays. That is eye-opening. And I hope to have another one here next year as well, host another one here in San Luis Coastal next year as well. We had a two-day gender spectrum training that was very powerful at the very end of January. We invited about 48 or 49 folks from around the county. Gender Spectrum is an organization up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I shared a little bit with you in Friday Notes a couple weeks back, including a little video clip from that training. Very powerful. There were about 18 members from our district there. We met afterwards just, briefly, and they were very motivated to carry on this training. So it was kind of a trainer's model, and so we're going to talk about how we can get that out to elementary schools, to principal groups, to whoever we think would be the most appropriate. So I'll be meeting with that group fairly soon. And then our equity team meets monthly from September to May. We've had meetings. We have a meeting this coming Thursday. We have a couple of members from the board, Marilyn and Marker, with us for those meetings. Our site equity work, there's a lot happening at sites. And Mrs. Stevens from Baywood's going to share a little bit about some activities they're doing at Baywood. But one of the things is Diverse Books Project. We earmarked about $50,000 this year for the purchase of diverse books. And I included a little link there to an article on just a brief blog article on windows and mirrors and the concept of windows and mirrors and books representing those things. Ways for students to see themselves and ways for them to see people that they are not accustomed to living with or knowing about through books. So the books serve as both windows and mirrors. At staff meetings all around the district, our principals and teams are starting to broach these topics and do different activities with sites. The December 12th Elementary Professional Development Day, several sites did some activities around the theme of equity. I've heard a lot about Changing Spirit Days, and I remember last year being on campus at Pacheco Elementary and a parent coming up, and she said, "Can I talk to you about Hawaiian Day?" And as soon as she said it, I laughed, and I thought, of course. Like, it's not Hawaiian Day. It's really, cheesy shirt day, rather. And if we really did Hawaiian Day, it would be representative of, the history and what Hawaii really is, rather than the stereotype of Hawaii. But there's a lot of conversations around those days and kind of taking a fresh look at those days and saying, that's probably not the best day that we should have for Spirit Day. Let's take a look at what that looks like. And then the cultural proficiency activities. Trudy recommended this cultural proficiency book. And one of the activities in there is looking at a cultural proficiency continuum. And like I said, Mrs. Stevens is going to share a little bit about what that is. But that's looking at practices at your site or your district that are on the cultural proficiency spectrum, from culturally damaging all the way up to culturally proficient. So we look at all the activities we do and we say, which category do these fall into? And there are five or six different categories. And some of the activities, quite a few, are up in the cultural proficiency realm. But there's also several that are down in the culturally damaging realm. And those are activities that we have to take a look at immediately and change. And that's happening at sites. So with that, I'll have Mrs. Stevens come up and share a little bit about what they've done at Baywood.
Great. So I'm excited to share some of the work that we've been starting with around equity at Baywood. I think all of us after August and hearing Trudy talk about how are we going to open doors, but I think what was so impactful for us was not even just opening the door, but how are we ushering our kids through that door? So we've kind of been taking that lens throughout the year of, you know, not just opening doors, but how are we ushering our kids through those doors? So one of the things that we did in December was we used our December Professional Development Day to invite everyone on our staff to be a part of it. So we had paraeducators, our secretary, our custodian, and we started with this inside-out approach of doing some self-reflection about our own K-12 experiences and what were some of the times when doors were closed for us and what were some of the times when doors were open for us. And it was, you know, a chuckling thing that, you know, some people were saying, well, I'll never forget that one teacher that told me never to sing again, you know, and I'll never sing in public. And we're like, oh, we're going to get that karaoke machine and we're going to get you to sing again, right? But it's those things that really, you know, close that door for, you know, one of our teachers on site and how that really stuck with them all these years later. And then we talked about what would our Baywood students say? So years from now, what would they say? Was there doors that were closed for them, or were there doors that were open for them? So we started to have that self-reflection of where are we as a school. From there, we kind of identified some of our school practices and district practices, and as Mr. Mayfield said, we put those across our culturally proficient curriculum that Trudy had given us, and we kind of saw, where are we landing in some of our practices? And sometimes I think it feels really overwhelming of like, well, now what? Right? So we have all this information, but what are we going to do with it? So from there, what we decided in our T2 and this trimester is just to make one equity goal per person. So what's one small step that you can take to open a door for a student in this trimester? So the picture that you see on the side there that says equity, all of those sticky notes is one intentional goal that everyone on our site is making for themselves of how they're opening a door for a student. And what we're doing is during staff meetings, we're celebrating that. So what is something that you did that opened that door? And then we're moving our physical sticky note over to that celebration column to celebrate some of the things that we've done. So some of the things in T2 that we've focused on so far is one is we were noticing how students are being dropped off very early to school and they can't afford childcare beforehand, or we don't have anyone out there till 8:10 when I have supervision. So I was talking to my library tech and she said, hey, why don't I just change my hours and I can open the library at 7:30. Kids can come in, they can have a bunch of books out, and it's a safe place and warm place for them to be. And thank goodness we did it right when it got freezing cold, right? So now we have a group of students, and not only that, she took it to another level. She put out on Nextdoor, which is an app, saying, hey, I work at a local elementary school. Are there any games that you have sitting around that you could donate to our school? And we got all of these board games that were donated to our school. Some kind of drinking games, not really professional for. We're like, we'll hide those for our, you know, TGIFs, but most of them very appropriate. And so now she has all these board games out there in the mornings for students to play. Other goals included for conference time this time around, teachers are offering night conferences for parents of work that are working. Other things included, we have a food bank that comes once a month to our site. We decided to call it, instead of the food bank, a farmer's market, and include the entire community to be as a part of that. And then we started taking it a step further of, okay, it's only from 3:30 to 4:30. We're not, you know, getting those doors open for our working families. However, if we have it in the evening, then there's never a perfect time, right? So then we took it to, well, why don't we be the personal shopper? So I contacted the food bank and said, hey, if I have, you know, 20 kids that I know get backpack food every month or every week that we send home with, if I contact them and they're interested, can I just be the personal shopper for these families and we send the food home with the families? And they said, sure, why not? So last two times for the food bank, we've had 25 bags of fresh fruits and vegetables that then we send home the next day with the kiddos. And to see kids like squealing because they're eating an apple or a carrot and having this bag of veggies, like, it brings tears to my eyes. It's incredible. So just those little steps that we're starting to take. And so in March, we have our second professional development day where we're going to be bringing our whole site together again. And our hope is that all of our stickies will move to that celebration column. In fact, I just sent out an email and said, hey, these aren't like New Year's resolutions that you forget about. Here's your equity goal, and you're going to be held accountable for them, you know, in a month. So if you haven't gotten to it, start to it. And so in March, we're hoping to celebrate that one step that we've taken forward to open those doors and then continuing to do that throughout the rest of the year. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. Wow.
Isn't that awesome? Just amazing. Probably never will we truly be able to measure the impact of all these changes and all these conversations, but that's happening. Things like that are happening all over the district, and it's really exciting. We get emails, calls, hey, what do you think of this idea? What do you think of that idea? And it's really amazing how much people have embraced this idea of equity and really put it into practice, things that make a difference in kids' lives immediately. I had contacted Tracy Nelms, and she brought to her social justice class this, because she was there at the gender spectrum training, and she shared it with her class, and they came up with some things to do around campus with gender immediately. And unfortunately, she and the students couldn't make it tonight. We talked about them being here to present this, but in the end, her husband was sick, and there were some other difficulties, so she couldn't make it. But this comes directly from her students at Morro Bay High School, from the social justice class, and these are some of the things they would recommend in terms of gender. So just ask students for their preferred names and pronouns, and for teachers to respect those names. And of course, that's law as well, as we know. Do not tolerate offensive remarks from others, you know, especially transphobic language. One of the things that we did a student panel the other day at the last equity meeting, and I was really struck by how much kids talked about that and how offensive some of the language is that they hear around campus. And, you know, that led me to start investigating, looking into what's called bystander training, which is a training we'll have next year. And I met with a group last Friday to talk about, you know, what that might look like, how we might roll that out. So just a lot of things happening. Stop assuming gender as a way to organize class. Stop using gender, rather, as a way to organize class. And then the one below that, don't assume gender if you don't know. Just use they or them as pronouns. Keep binary language out of the conversation. You know, stereotyping. Boys are like this, girls are like that. And then most importantly, be sincere. It's okay to make a mistake. At some point in time, we'll share with you, maybe invite you to a future gender spectrum training. Powerful stuff. One of the things I really liked about it is how they expanded gender to be about every single student and every single person. It isn't just about the couple of students who are transitioning or going through, you know, more remarkable gender transitions, but rather we all have a gender and we all fall on that spectrum somewhere. It was really a fascinating training. The district equity team, we have an equity plan, which I believe has been shared with you. Again, we have monthly meetings. We had the secondary student panel. They were very impressive young people from 9th grade to 12th grade who shared their feelings eloquently. And, you know, it was just amazing to listen to their insights and how they could express themselves. And also how they supported one another in the conversation. Not always necessarily agreeing, but supporting one another within the conversation. They were a perfect model of that civil dialogue. Pretty incredible. I wrote them all an email. And I copied their mother, and I said, you know, I copied your mother on this email because your mother needs to know that other people think you're pretty amazing, too. And I got back several emails from mothers saying thank you to the district for this remarkable work that the team is doing, that we hear our kids talk about it, and we appreciate them having these forums and this opportunity. We've been talking recently about parent involvement, how to reach out to parents, not only to share with parents what we're doing, but also to get from parents any suggestions or ideas that they have, because I know there's a lot of resources amongst our parent community. And then that ongoing, you know, logistical struggle to include the classified staff. You know, where are those opportunities to release the classified staff to come and participate in these activities? And those professional development days have proved useful for that. And then we're going to talk about some secondary topics, I think not this Thursday, but the next meeting. And we're going to invite the principals from the secondary schools and just talk about some topics happening at our secondary schools. And then we're, of course, looking into 1920 planning and what staff development might look like, parent outreach and input. Okay. So for next steps, we're going to develop by the end of this year, in June, I think, we'll have each site kind of take stock of where their site is at in terms of the gender, or rather the equity work that they have done, and to make a site equity plan for the steps that they're going to take next school year, the specific steps that they're going to take. We're going to look into doing bystander training, and I'll inform you of when that's happening and love to have you participate in that. We're going to get the roll out the gender spectrum training to sites and especially to elementary schools. As I sat and listened to the information and took it in, I kicked myself for not including more elementary folks in that. And so we may look at bringing gender spectrum, the organization, back to do another institute. And then again, I'd like to have an equity institute here next year, and then just the parent education piece.
Right. That's it. Thank you for that really important information. I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone here to address us on this item? All right, back to the board. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Rick, could you elaborate on bystander training for me? I'm not familiar with that. With that phrase.
So one of the things that the kids brought up is that there's a lot of really offensive language out there, and it doesn't always get addressed. It doesn't get addressed by students, but it also doesn't get addressed by staff. And oftentimes you hear people say things like, hey, don't talk like that, or don't say that, but that's the extent of it. And bystander training takes it a step further to say, this is a moment where we can educate here, so let's pull kids in. Hey, do you realize what you said, you know, has this impact on this other student? And teaching people how to be proactive as a bystander, rather than just sitting and listening to the comment, to step in and say, whoa, hold on a minute. Let me tell you why that's not okay. And let's talk about the impact that that might have on other students around us. And, of course, it goes more in depth than that. But, yeah.
Ms. Prime.
Thank you, Rick. This is really my thing.
Lights on.
I was wondering if we could get a copy of the cultural proficiency activities continuum.
Absolutely.
Just to look at it.
And, yeah.
I mean, this is all great stuff, so
sure.
I appreciate it.
I'll share with you Trudy's PowerPoint that she gave to us, and it has many of the activities on there. Another activity that I thought was very powerful is assigning individuals in the group as if they were students, and it gave a scenario of the family. You know, you low socioeconomic status, you know, parent education level, that kind of thing, and they're lined up against the wall. And then she would read out events that typically happened on a school campus, and if you could participate in that, a parent night, education night, doing your homework on a device, things like that, you would take a step forward. And, of course, you know, the families that had were all the way across the room in no time at all, and some of the kids that
right.
didn't were just right back there in that same spot without even having taken one step forward. And I know that many principals have done that activity with their teachers. Very powerful.
Yeah, it sounds powerful. Ms. Frame, are you requesting that be included in Friday notes?
Please.
Sure.
Yes,
happy to do so.
All right, anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, well, we will move on to our action consent item. Please advise if you would like anything pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.03, disposal of surplus. Mr. Millar.
I'll move approval of items 9.01 through 9.03.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Carries unanimously. Any advanced agenda items? Hearing none, then reports by board members. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. I really just wanted to take the time to thank Ryan for the information at the Measure D session that we had, open meeting that we had. It's really detailed but easy to understand, and he did a good job explaining it. I also wanted to congratulate the entire staff over at Morro Bay High School, the creation of the STEAM program and all the effort that went into thinking about it, and now the classrooms are ready to go. It's just a really clean, clear STEAM program, step by step by step, and it was an amazing to see.
Mrs. Roger.
Okay. I'm on. I don't have a board report, but I do have a question, and I don't, within the meeting format, doesn't seem an appropriate time for the question. So if you go to the bottom of our agenda, For our information, there are administrative regulations, two that are being modified. And my question had to do with enrollment for homeless students. I was unclear from what was in that AR how it works with a student who doesn't have an address, how they are assigned to a school. And I wonder, Mrs. McGrath, if you could just answer that for me.
Okay, maybe as Paige would say, I don't exactly know. I loved that. I think I know the answer, but I'd rather make sure.
Okay.
Want me to get back to you?
Friday notes, if anyone else is interested in... Okay, Friday notes, if you would.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Dr. Eisendress Rogers.
I just wanted to assure everyone, in case you had any doubt about this, that our choice for a foundation director could not have been better. Christine Robertson is such a great dynamic leader for this foundation, and I had the chance, of course, to be with her today as the entire foundation board met, and it was a house full, and everyone was full and bubbling and brimming over with great ideas, and so we're just off to a great start there. And yesterday we typically would have met in our subcommittee of the development committee, but it was a holiday, so she came over anyway to my house, and we had a lovely, you know, brainstorming session. So I just wanted to share with you what a great choice we have, and what a great bright future we have ahead for our foundation.
Thank you.
Sure.
Anyone else? All right. Well, we will adjourn our meeting. Our next regular meeting will take place on Tuesday, March 5th, at the J2 at the district office. All right. Thank you, one and all.